Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County. That's right, folks. It's Union City, as always. Insider NJ probably brings to you Politically Direct. And I am, of course, the professor, your favorite one, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 3rd of January, the year 2019. Folks, Happy New Year. And, of course, I thank you for joining us here and listening in from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State, and of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. Happy New Year's again, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you had a wonderful time with family and friends. Certainly, Christmas break was great to have. Hopefully, Santa was wonderful to all of you. He was wonderful to me with my Cowboys winning the NFC East and looking forward to Wild Card Weekend this Saturday as the NFL playoffs begin. So, Santa. Thank you again for bringing me the NFC Eastern Division Championship, and certainly I hope it's a long January with more games to come. So we'll see, again, as the NFL playoffs begin here in 2019. Now, you can always write the show's inbox, ladies and gentlemen, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I love getting email. I certainly answer them promptly, and I appreciate all your feedback, whether it's ideas for future guests or suggestions for topics or episodes. Write to me, folks, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me on Instagram as well at @your_favorite_Fernando. Of course, you can on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Folks, brand new followers, a lot of new likes every single day on the show's social media. So, again, I appreciate that. And certainly, tell your friends all about it. And, of course, for all you Facebook subscribers, take a moment, go to the official page for Politically Direct, like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, so do not be shy with me and call me toll-free at 818-572-8032. Once again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. Our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Now, again, once you click on the website, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on that, and you'll be automatically enrolled in our morning intelligence briefing. So when you get up in the morning, have your morning cup of coffee, maybe watching cable news, maybe watching the morning sports shows like I do, whether it's like Undisputed on Fox Sports, or maybe First Take on ESPN, whatever it is you're watching in the morning, and you're on your smartphone or your tablet or maybe your nearby Mac or laptop, whatever it is, check it out. It'll be conveniently delivered to your inbox every single morning. It's the best coverage. Actually, folks, let's be very honest about it. It's the absolute best journalism you'll see each and every morning via Insider NJ. So, again, www.insidernj.com. Click on the subscribe button. You'll get the morning intelligence briefing, wonderful articles, insights, the best journalism, again, you'll find anywhere in the city of New Jersey, wonderful columnists. Of course, it starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, certainly other columnists with the organization, such as Jay Lasser, a good friend of mine, and another one that we'll be having as our guest tonight. So I'm looking forward to talking with him in just a few moments. So again, folks, www.insidernj.com. Check it out. And don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Folks, again, hope you had a wonderful holiday break. I know I did, and I'm sure you missed me here on Blog Talk Radio. It's great to be back on here as the new year is here for us. And certainly I'm hoping a lot of good things for all of you here in 2019. And, you know, and to me, really, you know, again, listen, I'm grateful as we will start entering now year two of our program. We started in January of last year, and certainly it's great to keep the momentum moving forward here on Blog Talk Radio via my partnership with Insider NJ. We have a lot of great guests lined up here for the rest of the month and certainly throughout the year. So, again, we appreciate you taking the time to tune in on Thursday nights here live at 8 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio to your favorite podcast. And really, actually, the only podcast that you can really kind of listen to with some consistency and can depend on for in-depth analysis and really, you know, straight-up commentary. And that's what we bring here on Politically Direct, folks. And listen, I have to just say that, you know, 2018 was a great year for me, and certainly partnering with Insider NJ was a blessing. And certainly as the year progressed, having wonderful guests on last year was just an I'm just so grateful for that. And, you know, first one that comes to mind, of course, is the dean of New Jersey journalism himself, Michael Aaron, who not only came on the show once, but appeared twice. And certainly they were great episodes, great traffic those evenings. And certainly, you know, getting an invite to be with him on NJTV and Reporters Roundtable was an absolute honor. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to be able to come back as I've had the invitation sent to me again. So I'm really, really excited about representing Insider NJ on NJTV coming up later on this month, hopefully, on Reporters Roundtable, and certainly, you know, really just representing the people and representing what a lot of us are thinking here in New Jersey in terms of the political climate, the economic climate here in the state. And certainly I'll continue to be, you know, your voice, ladies and gentlemen. I'll continue to be your voice on the air and speaking for those that can't speak for themselves and just being that voice for the voiceless in the Garden State. So, again, I'll continue that crusade here in 2019. And it's really got me thinking, you know, of course, as we, you know, enter a new year and we enter with a lot of hope and aspiration, still some things, though, that kind of linger from 2018 that get me thinking now about sort of like the political climate that we live in. And it got me thinking really about how disenchanted I am that we're still dealing with political correctness, and sort of like this fixation that some in the political arena have when it comes to identity politics or when it comes to social engineering. And those are just things, quite frankly, folks, that I think that are becoming nauseating. And I know that I speak for a lot of people in New Jersey that are quite tired of it. And that's the subject of my first shot here tonight. You know, one of the things, folks, that I take a lot of pride in with concerning Politically Direct is the fact that, you know, I'm able to control the editorial here and to just be upfront and to be honest with you, because I owe it to you, my loyal listening audience, to tell you things as they should be, you know. And sometimes the truth is inconvenient. Sometimes the truth hurts. Sometimes the truth is not popular. One of the things I remember growing up as a kid, and this is a lesson my grandfather always taught me, and I think it's probably one of the things I inherited from him, was just sort of, you know, hey, you know, if you know in your heart that you're right, and you know deep in your heart, in your soul, that what you're doing is correct, let's be very honest about it. I'm of the belief that, you know, you do it, and if there are consequences to that, so be it. You know, you accept them. If you're doing the right thing and you're speaking up against things that are not right, then you know what? You can sleep better at night knowing that you're doing the right thing, that you're doing the righteous thing. And one of the things that really aggravates me about today's political culture, folks, is sort of this fixation on identity politics, or this sort of, you know, incessant obsession that some may have when it comes to political correctness. And, you know, not everything has to be about gender. You know, everything has to be about race. Everything has to be about orientation. And it's something that really doesn't sit well with me. And it's something that we saw a lot of it manifest itself in 2018, not just within the last year, but it's been happening for some years now. And I don't ever like to call out one side of the political aisle because, you know, I'm someone that's very centrist and I'm someone who's very middle of the road when it comes to my political beliefs. And I'm someone who's a moderate, you know, when it comes to economic issues, taxes, national security, border security, foreign policy. I tend to, you know, be a little bit to the right. I'm not going to lie to you. I tend to be a little conservative, not overly conservative. But when it comes to certain social issues, I certainly tend to be a little bit more progressive. And I know that that word sometimes gets people in trouble and it triggers people because, you know, what's a progressive? What's a liberal? You know, what's a leftist? You know, and I'm just someone that just tries to apply a lot of common sense and sort of, you know, rational thinking when it comes to, let's say, social issues. And, you know, I am Hispanic. I'm a minority. I understand that. I'm the son of immigrants. I'm a first-generation American. I'm part of all those things. But one of the things I don't take any pride in is this notion of having to rely on identity politics or the idea that we have to engage in social engineering for anything and everything in our political arena, in pop culture, that we have to sort of, you know, fixate on political correctness. And I see it all the time. And I remember during, you know, winter break now, since I'm off until the semester starts in a couple weeks, you know, I stop by my office on campus and I run into some of my colleagues and, you know, it's unavoidable to talk about politics. And I teach in social sciences, so my colleagues always have something to say or I always have a point to make. And they see me, they're like, hey, Fernando, you know, what do you think about A, B, and C? And I remember we were just talking about, I think, random issues in pop culture. And I remember just sort of someone saying to me, oh, you know, I was binge watching Netflix or Hulu over winter break, and I was watching, you know, certain franchises that were rebooted, such as the Ghostbusters. You know, the female version of the Ghostbusters came out 2 years ago, which was an absolute flop. Or the reboot of Ocean's 11, now it's Ocean's 8 to represent an all female cast. Or the idea that, you know, there's a new James Bond movie perhaps in the works, and now there's this idea that perhaps we need to maybe change James Bond, and maybe he's no longer the tall, dark, and handsome British man, and maybe we have to make him black, or maybe James Bond needs to be gay. And folks, you know, one of the things that really bothers me about this entire situation is the fact that I look at pop culture as my escape from everyday life. You know, the idea that I can go home and be able to watch a movie and enjoy it and escape from, you know, sort of like the political climate that we live in, or whether it's on the national level or here on the state level. And I use movies and television and books as my escape, as I'm sure many of you do as well. You know, and the idea that we have to start changing characters, like iconic literary characters, from sake of, oh, well, you know, under the umbrella or sort of the facade of progressivism, or the idea of, oh, of being more politically correct and being a more progressive society. Folks, this is nonsense. You know, and I'll be the listen. When I was in college and undergrad, you know, at Rutgers in New Brunswick, I remember at some point being an English major, and I remember reading a lot of books because I enjoyed reading. And folks, I read, you know, 10 of Ian Fleming's books. And if you know who Ian Fleming is, which you should, you would know he is the author of the James Bond series. So if you ever, you know, have enjoyed James Bond movies, I mean, they've been based on the books by Ian Fleming, the British author. And, you know, listen, I'm not one that's opposed to multiculturalism or certainly, you know, evolving with the times. But, you know, can we just leave certain, you know, iconic characters alone? You know, and again, let me be very clear here. You know, that doesn't make me a racist. It doesn't make me a bigot. It doesn't make me a homophobe. It doesn't make me a transphobe. It doesn't make me any of those things. But let me enjoy James Bond as he was written. Okay, the idea, no, like, listen, folks, James Bond is not Asian. James Bond is not Hispanic. Okay, James Bond is not black. He's not Middle Eastern. I mean, he is as the character is being written. You know, and the idea that we have to start changing these things around, you know, again, out of the guise of, oh, we need to be more progressive and we need to sort of update characters. No, we don't. Can we just leave certain things as they are when it comes to literary works, whether it's James Bond or movie franchises? No, we don't have to have a female Indiana Jones. guess what? We already had that with Tomb Raider and Lara Croft. No, we don't have to change, you know, Peter Parker, who is the alter ego of Spider-Man, and make him, I don't know, Hispanic now, or make him black, or make him Asian. Again, my opposition to it is not because I'm a racist. It's because I just believe in the authenticity of the character. You know, like this idea and this fixation about having to change things because of, oh, it's 2018, we need to be more progressive. I understand that. And there are certain social issues I think that applies to. But this fixation of you have to insert race and gender and identity into everything when it comes to pop culture, whether it's our movies, it's our books, it's our music, it's our television shows. Like, no, like, let's enjoy literary characters and iconic movie franchises as they are. Like, this idea that we need to tinker with them, well, guess what happens? They flop. You know, it happened with the female Ghostbusters movie. And no, folks, it's not because we're a sexist society that the movie flopped. No, it's not that we're not a sexist society. It's the fact that the movie sucked. It was a horrible plot. They were horrible actresses, and it did a tremendous disservice to the franchise. The same thing with Ocean's 11, okay? The fact that they had a reboot in the early 2000s with George Clooney and Brad Pitt, I mean, that was a very serious risk. If you grew up watching Sammy Davis Jr. and Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and everyone else who was in Ocean's 11, those are iconic characters. You start messing with them for the sake of either making a dollar or, oh, well, we have to be more inclusive. Folks, listen, this is what drives people crazy about political correctness and identity politics, okay? There's a time and place for everything, but do me a favor. When it comes to, like, our escapes such as movies and books and music and television, leave the classics alone. There's no need to insert everything, whether it comes to identity politics or political correctness, into our everyday life. A lot of people are sick of it. I know I am, and I'm pretty sure you are too. And that's my first shot. Folks, again, welcome to Politically Direct here on Blog Talk Radio. Feel free to call in tonight, toll free, 818-572-8032. Once again, 818-572-8032. And our toll free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. And now at 8:20 past the hour, it's my pleasure to welcome to the show my fellow colleague at Insider NJ, columnist and journalist extraordinaire, Mr. Fred Snowflake. Freddie, welcome to Politically Direct, brother.
That's great to be here. Thank you. It's nice to be called extraordinaire. That's very nice of you to do that.
Well, listen, you're a teammate, and I'm a team guy, and I always believe in standing up for my teammates. And, you know, Fred, I read your work. You're a great journalist. I love your writing. You know, as an academic, I'm always very anal about good literature and writing. I always emphasize that to my students. And when I read your columns, man, I'm always stimulated. You know, like, you know, you have a good pulse of what's going on, and I definitely want to get to that tonight. So, first of all, how was your holiday?
Oh, my holiday was very nice. How was yours?
Good. Listen, as I said at the top of the show, Santa was very good to me. My Cowboys are in the playoffs, and we won the NFC East, and I'm hoping for a very long January for the NFL
okay,
playoffs.
Okay, I happen to be a Jets fan, so
that's okay,
why are
that's
you
okay.
a Cowboys fan? Why are you a Cowboys fan living in New Jersey?
It's a long story. That might take another hour, Fred. I really don't want to bore
okay,
the audience,
okay.
But I love the legacy of the team, and my dad's a big Jet fan. I root for the Jets secondly because of my father, who's a long-suffering Jet fan. I mean, my dad is the Colombian version of Joe Beningo, if you know who that
okay,
is.
Okay, good. That's good enough. I understand that. Yep.
Yeah, my dad's long-suffering, but my dad's kind of rooting for the Cowboys because of me, you know, father, son. So we'll find out, but we'll see what happens come the playoff time. But, Fred, you know, great work that you put up on a regular basis. And, you know, certainly one of the things that as we start 2019, you know, I'm a homeowner and taxpayer, as I'm sure you are yourself as well. And I know that while, you know, at the time, Candidate Murphy, you know, got elected with, you know, relatively sort of a low turnout that year, you know, he got elected on a certain mandate. And, you know, he hasn't lied in the sense of how he was going to govern. He's very liberal. Some would say progressive, liberal. You know, we can sort of, you know, toy with the words. But the bottom line is that he didn't lie in what he said he was going to do. I mean, he's living up to everything that he campaigned on. And certainly what we saw in 2018, Fred, was that you know, and I said this on my appearance on NJTV a few weeks ago with Michael Aaron, you know, just because there's a D next to your name doesn't mean that everyone's the same kind of Democrat. And I think we saw that in 2018 in terms of the conflict between the governor, the state Senate president, and the assembly speaker. How do you see this feud materializing or continuing in 2019?
Well, I think it's definitely going to continue because, as you say, look, right now Democrats control the entire state. But as you kind of suggested, just because you're a Democrat doesn't necessarily mean you're a liberal in the true sense of the word. I like liberal. I don't like progressive. I think liberal is more traditional. People know more what that is. And, yeah, mm-hmm. The thing is, a lot of the Democrats, like Steve Sweeney in South Jersey, they just aren't as, say, liberal as Phil Murphy is. And I think that's why we've had problems with things like legalizing marijuana, for instance, and even raising the minimum wage. I mean, these are things that Murphy wanted to do, like, right off the bat, and they haven't been done yet. And it's debatable when they will be done.
Well, I know you've written about that in your articles, and I know that, you know, you just bring up a good point that, you know, these are some very, very vital issues that New Jerseyans are now going to be facing in 2019. And let's break them down a little bit, because I'm really curious as to your take on it. And we'll start with the minimum wage, because, you know, I talk about this all the time with my students, and I mention to them, I say, listen, you know, when we talk about the minimum wage, you know, we talk about the idea that it's not so much maybe the idea of a minimum wage, but looking at how we sort of conceptualize a living wage. And what I tell my students all the time, Fred, is I say, do me a favor, guys, without Googling it on your phones or computers, can anyone tell me what an EMT worker makes in New Jersey? Now, unless you're studying this, you're not going to know it. But the answer is that it's a little over $31,600, so roughly $32,000. So when you do the math over a 40-hour work week and an hourly, you know, wage, you're looking at a little over $14 and change. And I look at my students and say, is anybody going to dispute the fact that EMT workers should not be making more? I mean, certainly there are more prerequisites that are required for you to fulfill this job. There are certain certifications you have to meet. And I think no one's going to dispute here that EMT workers should be making more, right? Of course, my students all nod and agree.
No.
I said, okay, well, so, but when we talk about the minimum wage, we talk about sort of minimum skill jobs, you know, back when we were in college, right? Right. I used to wait tables, I bartended, I worked retail, worked in hospitality and customer service, and you know,
yep.
Those are the jobs.
I loaded trucks in the warehouse.
Yeah, and we do those jobs, but the fact of the matter is, and I said this on NJTV as well, you know, you can raise the minimum wage, whether it's in small increments, as Assembly Speaker Coughlin has recommended, or sort of like what the governor wants, like a straight shot to 15. But the problem is that, you know, the problem is Trenton, Fred. The problem is that New Jersey continues to be very expensive. It's becoming unaffordable for people. So you can raise the minimum wage to $20, but if Trenton doesn't sort of, you know, tighten their belt with spending and a responsible budget, it's sort of putting a Band-Aid on a puncture wound. Like, am I wrong here?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that raising the minimum wage incrementally will be the thing to do. I mean, as you say, like, if you go from like $8 to $15 in one day, that's going to be problematic. So you have to do it incrementally. But you hit on something more significant, how expensive New Jersey is. And, you know, I think it's not only the state taxes. It's obviously it's property taxes. As you mentioned, you own a house and so do I. And the property taxes are exceptionally high. And, you know, why? I mean, ask a general question. Why is that the case? One reason it's the case is that New Jersey has so many towns and school districts. It has more than 500 towns, about 600 school districts. And if you break it down, I mean, I'm not saying anything that people haven't said before, but you break it down, like in Bergen County has 70 towns. So you drive down a main road and every 10 blocks you're in another municipality. It seems okay, but then you realize that in that municipality, you have a police chief making $150,000 a year, and the same for the superintendent of schools and what have you, and you duplicate that 500 times. That's why property taxes are so high. I think that's the real issue. I mean, in terms of making the state less expensive, is trying to share service and consolidations. And I don't know if any governor really has the guts to do that, even though everybody talks about it.
Well, you know, and that's an interesting point you just brought up there, because you're right. I mean, it just seems like there's this plethora of municipalities, and that chews up so much of a budget, whether it's at a town level, a municipal level,
yeah,
or even a statewide level. And what drives me crazy, and I know that right before the end of the year, and I read different news sources in New Jersey. Obviously, I start my day with Insider, but I know you read as well as I do.
Well, you don't have
and
to do
it's
that.
Just,
you get started with the New York Times if you want
to. Oh, okay, well, there you go. Of course. Well, of course. And, yeah. But one of the things that struck me, and I posted about this on the podcast page, where I said, hey, you know, I'm not here to sort of be with pom-poms and be a cheerleader for anyone in particular, but thank God when, you know, State Senate President Steve Sweeney kind of like, you know, stopped on the brakes a little bit when the governor went on to say on the record, hey, you know, in 2019, you know, hey, everything's on the table, you know, raising taxes is on the table. And I'm glad that, you know, and this might piss off some people tonight, I really don't care, but I'm glad Steve Sweeney kind of said, hey, hold on a second here. Like, what, you know, and
no,
it was funny to me because I would read Democrats on social media, whether they're very liberal Democrats or more moderate Democrats, that were saying, oh, my God, Steve Sweeney is a traitor to the Democratic Party, or Steve Sweeney. No, I think with Steve Sweeney, I think is, you know, probably just like every other New Jerseyan, like, okay, like let's stop with this fixation on taxation. I say it all the time. It's like, you know, it just seems like the legislature has never met a tax that they've never liked, Fred. And it drives me crazy where, you know, I hear this rhetoric of, well, you know, perhaps there's a plastic bag tax on the horizon in New Jersey coming up this year, and the gas tax is going to go up again. And perhaps now we're going to be seeing other taxes. And it's just like, wait a minute, like, hello, can we have like some sanity here? And it doesn't, and it seems like when someone says that openly, like Steve Sweeney did, like he got attacked unmercilessly. And I don't understand why attack Steve Sweeney. If anything, attack the governor who's going on record saying that, hey, you know what, I might want to raise taxes again. I don't understand the disparity, Fred.
No, I understand what you're saying. I think Steve Sweeney, myself, I think Steve Sweeney is right. I mean, he's probably right for two reasons. I mean, one reason, as you, okay, I mean, the solution to every problem can't be to raise taxes. I mean, that's the bottom line, I think. But also, Steve Sweeney is right politically. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that the Republicans' argument is kind of what you just said a few minutes ago, that the legislature, the Democrats have never met a tax they don't like. And sometimes that's an effective political argument because sometimes it's true. And I think just for sheer politics alone, Democrats and the governor have to stop looking at raising taxes every time there's some sort of a crisis. And you kind of have to look in the other direction of how you could do things cheaper. And I think you mentioned, like we've been talking before, about consolidating sharing services and at least trying to control property taxes would be a step in the right direction.
Listen, you're absolutely right on that. And to sort of harp on a point you made before, which I think was brilliant, was the idea that, you know, especially in New Jersey, because it's so densely populated, and, you know, you brought up the example of Bergen County, you're absolutely right, whether you're driving off of 17 or some of the main roads there, I mean, you can drive through four municipalities in the span of, like, 10 minutes.
Exactly, and the point is, okay, that may just seem to be like a little quirk, but, I mean, as you say, if you think back, all those four towns have their own municipal government and their own school system, and they're paying a lot of money, relatively speaking, to employ the individuals. Let's not condemn the individuals doing the job. They're just hired to do a job. So, I mean, they have to make a living too. But it's just that the bottom line is that, you know, you go to other states, and granted, other states are different because they're not as crowded as New Jersey, but you have, like, one county could be an entire school system.
Yes.
So now that may not be the case here because I say we're so overcrowded, but you know, you just can't have towns like with 10,000 people having their own school system, their own police department, their own DPW, and that's why taxes are so high.
No, listen, you're absolutely right about that. And I'm glad you brought up the point about the fact that, listen, this is not you and I here trying to malign, you know, municipal workers in these townships, you know, whether it's the police department or other municipal workers. I mean, listen, I'm one of those type of individuals, Fred, that I get it that, you know, every municipality needs to sort of sustain itself. But, you know, listen, I'm an educator. And when I hear that teachers and other educators in my field aren't getting raises, but we see, like, for example, police departments and a lot of municipalities in New Jersey, that you have chiefs making six figures in a relatively quiet town where, okay, listen, you know, I understand if you're the police chief in Newark or Camden or Elizabeth, in much more urban areas where there's much more, you know, sort of industrialization and it's more densely populated, that's one thing. I mean, you need manpower. But, I mean, I've looked at Oprah requests that I've put in different municipalities here. Let's, again, bringing up Bergen County to you. There's some municipalities in Bergen County that you have officers and police chiefs making these absurd salaries and relatively quiet towns. I'm not saying that things don't happen, Fred. I mean, but it's crazy. Like, you know, the police chief in Ridgewood, New Jersey, or Paramus or Hawthorne, which are relatively quiet towns. I mean, I think when you look at, you know, crime per capita that's committed, you know, that's reported, I mean, it's relatively low. When you have officers and the police chief or lieutenants and captains making almost six figures, if not six figures. I'm like, hello, I get it. You know, you're putting your life on the line, but my God, you know, it's crazy.
Well, absolutely. And that's kind of, again, you know, a lot of governors, even Chris Christie talked about this, but I mean, the difficulty is sometimes you meet mayors and councilmen and you find they're very impressed with the power that they think they have, or the power that they do have. And that's the problem. I mean, no mayor wants to give up his little fiefdom.
Oh, listen, you're absolutely right about that. And again, listen, you're right about
that. And if you think about
it,
No,
go on.
I'll go one step further. The problem is, like, if you look at so many people in the state legislature just by happenstance, I mean, people who are assembly people and state senators, I mean, 10 years ago, they were mayors and councilmen. So they kind of associate with mayors and councilmen. That's why I think nothing really changes in this regard.
Absolutely right about that. And I think in that sort of perpetuates, again, sort of like the original topic here, talking about the minimum wage and talking about, I think it's important to look at wages across the board, Fred, where I get it that, you know, there are a lot of working class families that are struggling because they're working one, two, maybe even three jobs to sustain themselves here in New Jersey. And I get all that. I understand when you have, you know, certain like liberal groups in New Jersey, such as like the New Jersey Working Families Alliance or labor unions talking about, you know, we need to get to 15 right away. I understand that. And again, I don't want to belittle the struggles of working class people in New Jersey, Fred, but the problem is that, again, if the legislature and Trenton doesn't act more responsibly on an economic level, then you can make it $20 an hour. And guess what's going to happen? The cost of living is going to keep going up, and, you know, goods and services keep going up, and food, everything else keeps going up. And it becomes sort of like a vicious cycle that seems to be no solution in end. But another issue I want to sort of pick your brain about tonight, Fred, also too, because I know, you know, you've written about it, and certainly it's in the headlines in New Jersey. And, you know, certainly there was a rush right before the end of the legislative session last month when it came to looking at marijuana and the outright legalization. And I know that, and it's a point that, you know, I brought up again when I was at NJTV last month, and I'll say I've talked about it on this program. It just seems like there was an entire year that went by, and I understand that upon taking office, the governor and the legislature have to sort of work towards making sure that the budget is passed before June. You know, obviously you don't want another shutdown and everything else. And I get all that, but it just seems like there was this sort of incessant need to ram it through and to rush this. And for me, and I've had State Senator Ron Rice on, I've had State Senator Weinberg on the show, I've had State Senator Stack on another podcast, State Senator Cunningham. Pretty much it's almost all been in agreement where you have to kind of look at this very meticulously. And the reason I'm so passionate about this, Fred, is because before I got into academia, I worked for the state of New Jersey. Like, I worked in our CJ system. So I worked as a probation officer in the judiciary. I worked for the public defender. Like, I worked 10 years in jails, okay, working with, you know, very diverse populations. And I've always been of the belief that the component of marijuana in New Jersey is two things. A, decriminalization has to be realized as quickly as possible because, let's be very honest, what we've been doing for years, not just in New Jersey, but nationally, we've been incarcerating people, black and brown people, for many years. And on these ridiculous drug charges, they're eating up spaces in our jails. They're eating up resources where we could utilize for more serious offenders within our CJ system. And I think that's something that really has gotten lost here. You know, never mind the legalization part. I mean, we'll get to that in a minute. But for me, the reason I'm so passionate about this is because, you know, we incarcerate, especially, you know, lower echelon working class people on these on marijuana charges. They can't afford an attorney. Most likely have to plead guilty. And as I tell my students all the time, guess what? You get caught with marijuana in New Jersey right now, you're going to lose your financial aid. You're going to lose your right to vote. You're going to be, you're going to have a conviction on your record, which makes it difficult for you to obtain employment, to pay off your fines. And it just, you'll continue the vicious cycle in our criminal justice system. And I just, and I think to me, it's like, why is the legislature taking so long to do this? Like, I get it about outright legalization. You know, that's something maybe you have to be a little more meticulous about, you know, because once you let the genie out of the bottle, you can't put it back in. But the decriminalization contract really infuriates me.
I think it's the issue is what we talked about a few minutes ago. Just because the Democrats, a lot of them are simply not that liberal and not that progressive. And, you know, politicians on both sides of the aisle, they tend to be afraid. Sometimes they tend to be afraid to take bold steps or bold action. And I know that most polls talk about, most polling I've seen is the majority of people in the state support complete legalization. And I certainly support decriminalization. But, you know, I think some of the, I had one legislator told me that he, all the calls he gets in his office are from people against legalization. So that's what lawmakers react to. They figure, you know, maybe if a poll says 60% of the people in the state support legalizing pot, but those 60%, a lot of the people don't vote. But, I mean, the people who do vote, I mean, you know what I'm saying? You got to separate the whole mass of people in the state and those who actually vote. And we all know that very few people vote in state legislative elections. So I think that's what they're afraid of. I think it's a good comparison as the issues are completely different. But they're in the same way, they're taking a bold step. Remember a few years ago when gay marriage was a big issue in the state, and you would think that a somewhat progressive state like New Jersey would be more proactive in supporting gay marriage. And if we recall, gay marriage only came about because of the rulings from the court. And I think this is kind of the same way, just sort of a reluctance to take sort of a bold step. And that's what, and in many ways, you look what's going on, the trend is certainly going in the other direction around the country. I mean, many states are legalizing pot, and people are voting in favor of it at the ballot box. But New Jersey still seems to be slow in doing it.
Well, what do you think? Do you think a good solution, Fred, would be instead of waiting for the legislature to do something about it, or do you think it'd be more proactive to put it, let's say, on a referendum this November?
I think,
you know,
that would
on
be
the ballot.
Great idea. I mean,
now,
I think that would be a great idea.
Now, realistically, listen, between you and I, Fred, and our audience, like, listen, I'm someone that, and I might, you know, it's funny, like I start sounding like my parents when I say the following, but which is fine. But it's interesting to me because, you know, I'm one of those that, again, you know, having worked in the CJ system, my belief is just that decriminalization is important. You know, if we can expunge certain records and allow people to sort of recover parts of their lives back, I think that's important. I think that's a vital component, I think, of for individuals across economic backgrounds to be able to sort of, you know, get their lives back together. And I'm all for that, you know. But my issue with outright legalization is, and it's something I was just talking about with some friends over the weekend during winter break. And for me, you know, I've never smoked marijuana. Like, I don't care to. It's not something that I enjoy. I don't really care for it. Like, for me, after I do the show tonight with you, like, I'm going to stay home and I'm going to have a glass of red wine because I like red wine. I'm going to relax. And that's my relaxation. Now, again, that doesn't make me better than anybody. I'm not saying I'm superior, but that's what I like to do. But the idea that, you know, we've seen in other states, and I know that, you know, the way we've grown up, Fred, you know, we've become very desensitized to the way we look at alcohol and tobacco. You know, when we were kids, you know what I'm saying? Like, whether it was coming out from middle league practice or coming home, you know, yeah, maybe would we see our neighbors on their front porch having a beer or having a cigar or having a cigarette. Okay, yeah, we grew up on that. Or when we went to barbecues with our parents, we'd see adults, you know, having a beer or having a cigarette. And okay, but the idea now, the visual, you know, and optics is everything, Fred, where, you know, the idea now that, you know, you're walking around and you could sort of visibly see, you know, just marijuana being smoked openly. Like, you know, I live in Union City. I know you're a Union City native, so it's good to talk with you, obviously, about that because, you know, you're a native here. But, you know, I live 5 minutes across from Manhattan. I go to Manhattan all the time. I take public transportation. I take those very sanitary vans that people talk about into Manhattan. And when you're walking down the Port Authority,
vans, yep.
Yeah, and, you know, those sanitary conditions that we're exposed to, of course. And, you know, but when you walk out of the Port Authority, like, there's this ridiculous aroma of marijuana because, you know, yes, Manhattan and New York State has decriminalized marijuana, and certainly NYPD is not really ordered to, you know, sort of fixate on those that are smoking marijuana. But it just, to me, it's like, it's an unpleasant smell. I don't really care for it. And I don't know, man, like, to me, Fred, like, it's one of those things where, like, are we, even though New Jersey's on the East Coast and we're, you know, we're sort of, you know, maybe more liberal than, let's say, people in the South or Midwest, but I don't know, man, I just think, to me, it's like, I don't know if people are really coming to grips with the fact of just, like, having marijuana being smoked openly anywhere and everywhere.
Well,
I don't know if we're there yet, man.
Well, two things I would say, just, I think, I mean, the rules would be the same as smoking cigarettes, right? So, I mean, you wouldn't be able to smoke in a restaurant or a bar, and yeah, you could be able, you could smoke on the street, but,
mm-hmm.
I, you know, I grew up at a time, I'm sure you mentioned it before, like, when I was growing up, just about everybody smoked. I mean, all adults just about smoked all the time. So you're right about,
mm-hmm.
my parents both smoked. So, I mean, the thing is, I don't think there'll be smoked that, I don't think there'll be smoked as openly as you may think. And then, of course, the other issue, I know that if marijuana was legalized, there's a lot of edibles. I mean, candy bars and what have you. So a lot of people could use marijuana that way, and they wouldn't even be smoking it at all. I mean, that's another issue. Now, I mean, that also poses problems too about some of the edibles. But still, I mean, I don't know if smoking, as you say, would be that much of an issue.
Well, again, to me, the way I look at, and folks, if you're just joining us right now here live on Blog Talk Radio, here at 840 on the East Coast, it's my pleasure to have with me fellow Insider NJ columnist and journalist extraordinaire, Fred Snowflack, here on Politically Direct. Fred, listen, you're right about all those points. I'm just of the belief that I don't know if, as a state, and like I said, I think it'd be really interesting to see, like, if you want to see voter turnout, or if you want to see people mobilizing to the polls, I would really love for the legislature, just like other states have, put it on a ballot, put it on a referendum, vote, and if it passes, then it gets legalized. If it doesn't pass, then hey, you know, we'll see what happens. It happened in Colorado. It's happened in other states as well. It would be very interesting to me if this is put in a referendum. How many New Jerseyans, A, will go out to the ballot box, and B, it'd be interesting to see what the turnout could be for something like this, because coming up this November, all 80 assembly seats are up for grabs here in New Jersey, which we'll get to in a minute, because I think it's interesting that when we talk about, well, what has to change in New Jersey? Well, maybe who's in the legislature, maybe that's a good sort of indicator of maybe some change that's necessary when it comes to, you know, sort of like the spending that goes on in Trenton. But I would really like to see how this would look on a ballot referendum. Do you think this would really, like, boost turnout? Or would it just be, as you mentioned, well, people who don't vote aren't really going to care? Or do you think this is just really going to get people out to vote?
I think it definitely would both boost turnout. Because, as you say, all the assembly seats are up this year. You know, talk to people walking down the street or talk to people having a drink in a bar, you ask them who the state assembly person is, and chances are they're not going to know. So, I mean, there's not a lot of interest in the state assembly. So, yeah, something like marijuana definitely would boost turnout. I think from a political point of view, in this way, it makes life easier for some of our state legislators because, in a way, they're passing the buck. They don't have to decide. They just let the people decide. And that, in a way, could be pure democracy as well. So I think that should be an option. I think it would pass. Maybe it won't pass, but I think it should pass, and it probably will pass, but at least that should be an option.
No, absolutely. Listen, you're absolutely right. And listen, again, it'd be interesting if the legislature took that option, because to be honest with you, it kind of washes their hands of it. I think it kind of helps the legislature pass the buck. I think it helps them pass the buck.
I mean,
to be honest with you, I think it gives them an out.
It absolutely does. I mean, it may not be the most the best way to govern to pass the buck, but it does get them off the hook.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of, you know, sort of passing the buck, you know, here in New Jersey, Fred, you know, taxes, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, certainly are a concern to us. I know that, and I talked about this with some of my colleagues over break. And, you know, again, you know, sort of going back to the premise of then candidate Murphy to now Governor Murphy, I mean, listen, nobody should be shocked about what the governor is advocating for. I mean, the governor is not sort of, you know, saying one thing and then doing another. Like, the governor is looking to govern exactly as he campaigned, you know, very liberal, along taxation, along social issues. And, you know, one issue that really I would say is something that to me I think is near and dear to my heart, because I have so many friends out there, is, you know, this idea that, you know, because of taxation and whether it's, you know, the governor and the attorney general's position on, you know, perhaps making New Jersey a sanctuary state, which for all intents and purposes, mm-hmm. you know, if you looked at the attorney general's directive, you could say, you know, basically that's what New Jersey's become. But you know what, the idea that, you know, making New Jersey the California of the East, like, no offense, dude, and to everybody listening, like, and I have plenty of friends in California, Fred, I don't want to be anything like California. I mean, the state is in a fiscal rut. We're seeing what, you know, liberal policies are doing to the state, especially when it comes to immigration, when it comes to law enforcement, when it comes to taxation. And no offense to anyone listening tonight, like, the last thing I want to do is make New Jersey anywhere near what California is right now. I mean, that's just one of my fears. How do you see it?
Well, I think what you said is correct. I mean, New Jersey basically is a sanctuary state. Now, if you consider what, in my mind, what does that mean? That means if you're in the country, let's assume you're in the country illegally, okay, and you get stopped for speeding by the local cops. The local cops will give you a ticket for speeding, but they will not turn you over to federal authorities for being in the country illegally. That's my understanding. And you could say it's not only speeding, it would be like minor crimes, like, say, shoplifting or something like that, that the federal immigration authorities would only get involved if someone's here illegally and they commit a very, like, a serious crime. And you could argue what a quote-unquote serious crime is, but talking about things like, like an indictable offense. That's my understanding. And, you know, a sanctuary city, sanctuary state has become sort of last year, I'll use an example. I was at a town meeting in Parsippany in Morris County, and the mayor was asked about Parsippany being a sanctuary, city, a sanctuary town. He said he didn't like the term sanctuary town, but he does not want the local cops to enforce federal immigration law. Now, that's basically, if you don't have the local cops enforcing federal immigration law or cooperating with the federal government, that's basically a sanctuary city. So, in a sense, you know what I'm saying?
Correct, yeah.
It doesn't make any difference what you call it. It is what it is. And I think that's what that is. I mean, that is what's happening now, right? And I don't know if I may disagree. I don't know if things are so chaotic in California. You may know better than me, but I mean, I think that's the case now in New Jersey.
Well, it seems that way to some extent, Fred, because, you know, when I look at whether it's that policy or, and listen, you know, I know that because I work at a community college, I know that the policy kicks in this semester where there are a lot of community colleges statewide that are now going to be tuition free due to the governor's, you know, that was one of the governor's campaign promises about trying to make community college free for people. You know, and again, listen, on paper, that looks great. You know, I'm a big baseball fan, and, you know, on paper, every year the Yankees look great. But, you know, does that translate into them executing in being great, well, that's another story. And on paper,
it looks great.
No, but what I'm saying is that, you know, the governor on paper wants to sort of sell us this sort of notion that, well, this is good for New Jersey and, you know, it's beneficial. And I understand that. Listen, you're not going to find a bigger proponent of education than myself working in the field. But at the end of the day, though, Fred, it's like, who's paying for this? And at what point are New Jerseyans paying for things that, quite frankly, may not be sustainable in the long term? Like, is this really a good strategy by the governor?
You mean community college? I would say yes, because, I mean, obviously it really hasn't happened yet, but I don't know. I mean, you're in education. I mean, it's been a long time since we as a society decreed that public education goes from kindergarten to the 12th grade. But you realize that times have changed, and to extend it two more grades in community college, I don't think that's all that outrageous. Now, granted, you got to figure out how to pay for it, but I mean, I don't think that's so outrageous. I think it's a legitimate goal.
Well, in that regard, yes. Again, my concern, and I've always said this because I work in higher education, and you know, the cost of tuition, the cost of fees in New Jersey just continues to skyrocket, and that's one of the things that I'm really disappointed in when it comes to not. It's not just Governor Murphy. I think this is going back to Governor Christie, maybe Governor Corzine, or before. Like, I've really been very disappointed in the legislature for years now, where they can't seem to sort of get the state schools, like the state colleges and universities, and sit them down and say, hey, I understand that you feel a need to either raise tuition or raise fees because you're justifying it in this, you know, by A, B, and C. I don't know, man, between you and me and the wall and the audience, as they say, I don't think the legislature's been hard enough on these state schools to really, again, tighten their belt and say, wait a minute, you know, tuition keeps going up, you keep raising fees on students. You know, I see it where I teach. And it's disappointing because this is where, and listen, I'm a Rutgers alumni. I am as proud of Rutgers alumnus as you'll ever find. But I keep seeing, you know, and, you know, where I teach at the community college, I have students that are transferring into Rutgers or Montclair State or William Patterson or other state schools. And every other semester, you're seeing these exorbitant, like, spikes in fees and in tuition and everything and books. I mean, it's just, it's to a point where, you know, education at a four-year college university is becoming unsustainable. And I'm really just, I've gone to panels, I've gone to symposiums, and I've raised my voice about this, where, hey, if the legislature is really serious about education reform, why don't you, like, really not hold a gun to these universities' heads, but sit them down and say, hey, you need to really shape up here because you can't keep doing this to kids in New Jersey. Like, am I wrong with this attitude, or is it just something that's going to be like...
No. I think you're definitely right. You're definitely right. I don't think there'll be much disagreement with that. I think you're definitely right.
You know, it's just crazy. And folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 8:55 here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, if you just joining us, I have with me my fellow colleague at Insider NJ and journalist extraordinaire, of course, Mr. Fred Snowflake, here on Politically Direct. Fred, what was your epiphany, point in your life, did you say to yourself, you know, journalism is an institution that I'm fascinated with, and this is what I want to do for a living? When did that epiphany hit you?
Well, it happened very early in life. You mentioned being a big baseball fan. It sounds like you like the Yankees. I've always been a Met fan. But anyway,
okay.
I grew up in Union City. Where do you live in Union City, by the way?
Oh, I live on 47th. I'm proud there. Very proud of Union City, 47th Street. How about yourself? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up on 22nd and Bergen Line.
Okay, very nice. Okay, excellent. Very nice.
But anyway, growing up, I was always a big fan of all sports. And, you know, I realized I wasn't going to play shortstop in the major league. So I always liked to write. So I went to college, majored in journalism, and the idea was to become a sports writer. But, you know, when I went to Seton Hall. So when I went through college, my interest changed. I still love sports, but I began getting interested in quote unquote real news, which is like politics and current events. So I just got a job with the Hudson Dispatch in Union City. Remember the Hudson Dispatch? I'm sure you do.
Yes, I remember it. It was a local paper. Yeah, it was a great paper. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, of course, then I just went on. I was with the Morristown Daily Record for about 25 years. And like a lot of people ended up getting laid off, and now I'm writing for a website. So, but anyway, I really got involved in, I really was interested in journalism at a very young age.
Well, you know what? And again, I've read your work for a long time, and again, it's as reputable as there is out there. And I know that. And no, you're more than welcome. I know Insider is obviously very proud to have you on board, and it sort of leads me to my next question here because I really want to get your thoughts on this. And you know, the institution of journalism, Fred, I think for many years now has I don't like to use the word under attack. But the institution of journalism for many years now, I think, has sort of developed a reputation. And I've always been of the belief, and listen, I'm a very middle-of-the-road guy. As I talked about, you know, at the onset of the show here during my opening monologue, like I'm a guy that's kind of center-right for the most part, you know. Like I can be progressive on some social issues, but I tend to be like more center-right on everything else. And, you know, it seems that for many years now, we've seen this sort of perception, whether it's because of cable news, whether it's because of the internet, blogging, podcasting, whatever, there seems to be this sort of notion that journalists, by and large, tend to be very liberal. The liberal media, that moniker came from somewhere. And I always, you know, when I have discussions or debates with my colleagues, they'll always say, "Well, you know, I hate when people, you know, say liberal media because." Fox News. I'm like, yeah, but let's be honest, Fred. You know, if we name 10 random, you know, serious publications in the United States right now, okay, there's Fox News. I know people that are on the left ideologically sort of fixate on Fox News a lot about sort of, you know, their coverage or their slant or their point of view. But when you think about the New York Times, especially their editorial page, you think about the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, LA Times, I mean, by and large, Fred, like it seems like journalism has always leaned very heavy to the left, and it seems that, you know, when that point is raised, whether it's on panels, debates, commentary, you know, pundits, whatever, it seems like, well, oh, but there's Fox News. Yeah, but, you know, there's 10 apparatuses, and once Fox News, the other 9 tend to be pretty liberal, so why the outcry? Why does there seem to be sort of this disingenuous nature by, let's say, a lot of journalists nationwide? I'm not saying you do that. I know you don't. But, you know, being a journalist in the field, you know, again, and I know you can't speak for your colleagues, but when you look at the landscape in general, like, is it an accurate label to say liberal media?
Well, the thing is, in some respects, if you accept the idea that a journalist is a watchdog and challenge authority, that in itself could, in theory, be like liberal ideas. You're supposed to like challenge what's going on and ask questions. I think maybe that's part of it.
Fred, I'm losing.
A lot of journalism is basically asking questions and challenging authority, and that could be considered liberal points of view. And I think that's part of what happens. I think now the real problem is that, you know, with cable news, I mean, there is, you mentioned that I think newspapers still do a fairly good job of trying to be balanced. I mean, cable news is different. Obviously, we have Fox, we have MSNBC, which could be just as left wing as Fox is right wing. And the problem, and you also have, it's not only Fox News, because you have a lot of right-wing websites as well. So, And I think that part of the problem and the divide in the country these days is that people on the left and the right get their news from different places, and there's no real middle ground.
Well, I mean, that's, and you're right about you're right about that. It seems it's either there are some apparatuses, as you mentioned, that either lean very far right or far left, and there's maybe nothing in the middle for people like myself who are moderates or maybe people who are more centrist. So yeah. I have to sort of ask you, you know, when you saw the, you know, sort of the moniker become popular in 2015, and it's being used a lot now by the president, it's used a lot by some on the ideological right. When you hear the term fake news, like, is that just, is that infuriating to someone like you who's like a reputable, incredible journalist that,
I don't know, it's kind of stupid, really. I mean, if you look at the president, I mean, just about every news story he does not like, he calls fake news. I mean, that's the impression I get, and that's kind of silly, isn't it, when you come right down to it? That's like the mayor of a town, if there's a story about taxes going up and he doesn't like it, he calls it fake news. I don't think you could take that seriously.
Well, you know what? That's a fair observation. I know that many people that are fans of the president certainly look at articles or coverage that maybe isn't favorable or that is slanted, perhaps, and you know, that acronym comes out a lot. Do you think, though, Fred, that even traditionally, and I know you mentioned that, for example, I know the Bergen Record was seeing some buyouts, and we've been seeing traditional, newspaper publications really suffering because of cable news and the internet. Do you see physical papers just sort of transitioning out at some point? Like, is that death imminent, or do you think it can be preserved?
Yeah, Tiffany, one thing you said before, you know, like getting back to the fake news, you're right. If you may think a news story is quote unquote slanted, or at least like in one direction or not, but that in itself doesn't make the whole thing fake. You know what I'm saying? There's two different things.
Sure.
I mean, like you could, there could be a story on, say, the government shutdown, which is going on now, and it could be written in a way that is favorable to the Dems more than the president. And okay, Republicans may not like the story, but the story is still true in the sense that the government is shut down. Like, you know, the problem with fake news is that if someone says that, it suggests that everything is just made up. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't want to get into too nuances. Anyone could read a newspaper story and say, oh, this looks a little tilted one way or the other. But that doesn't mean the whole thing is made up. It's not fake. That's the key point I want to make. I think you know what I'm saying.
No, you know what? No, absolutely. And I'm glad you outlined that for us tonight, because I think it's important for it to really get to the heart of why there's such a disenchantment with media. And I think that on a national level, I mean, I read a lot of polls, and I certainly, you know, use a lot of them for research when I lecture for my courses. But did you foresee this as a problem moving forward, where it just seems like there's a general mistrust by a lot of, let's say, mainstream Americans nationwide about the media? Like, is that reparable in the long term?
Well, of course it's a problem. I mean, like, the thing is that, you think, I don't know, not to be, it sounds like a cliche, and it is a cliche, but it's also true that in a democracy, for a democracy to function, people have to know what their government is doing. And if people do not believe the news reports on what's going on, then you have a problem, right? I mean, I don't know if we're at that point now, but I mean, that's what the situation is. You asked about newspapers. Yeah, I think, see, there's two things. The actual newspaper, the printed newspaper, probably is going to disappear. Maybe it won't be for another 50 years or so, but it probably will disappear. But I think the real problem is that, you know, as newspapers, you mentioned the buyouts at the Record, as newspapers shrink and shrink and shrink, they simply do not have as many reporters anymore. You know, if you don't have any news in the printed newspaper, you don't have any news online either, and that's the problem. And that's why websites like the one I'm now have to try to fill that void. So, I mean, but you're right about the newspaper. I don't know if newspapers are going to survive.
Well, you know, and it's disappointing because, you know, I'm a guy that, you know, I grew up in Hudson County here, and I was a guy, like, you know, you just mentioned before that, you know, I like picking up the Hudson Dispatch. I still read the Jersey Journal daily. I do like to pick up, like, a physical, tangible paper every now and then. You know, I'm a big sports guy. So, you know, I'm a guy that goes to the store, gets his coffee, and reads his newspaper from the back to the front. You know, I read the sports first, and then I read editorials, and then I read the news. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that enjoys doing that, like getting a paper. You know, I think it's something that you know, I was taught at a young age to do and read every day. But you're right about that. It seems like it's, you know, the inevitable death will come at some point. Hopefully it doesn't come for a very long time. But, you know, again, you know, we've become such a smartphone-dependent society, Fred, where, you know, pretty much we're always on the go. We have everything on our phones. We can check news. I mean, there's an app for almost everything when it comes to information. And while that's great in one sense, I think it could also be a bad thing, though, Fred, because it's like we become so saturated and inundated with information that at times, like, there aren't enough hours in the day to really decipher what's accurate and what's not. Like, I read Drudge, I read the New York Times, I read the AP, I read USA Today, I read CNN, I read, like, maybe five other sources that I can think of. But there are only so many hours in the day you can do all that. And then to sort of research what's true and what's not, I mean, I think that's a frustrating aspect for even a regular person like myself, right? So for you as a journalist,
yeah,
like, how much harder is your job now?
Well, I don't know if that makes it harder. I mean, I still try to do the same thing I always did. I mean, I don't know. No, I don't think it makes my job harder. I mean, it might be harder to filter out. It might be harder to see all the things you mentioned, plus reading social media, like sort of like Twitter accounts by people and things of that nature as well. But no, I mean, that may make it more difficult for people reading about the news, but it doesn't really make my job any more difficult.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, listen, we have enough headaches every day. You know, if we can have less of them, that's always a good thing. You know, Fred, Moving forward in 2019, you know, without, you know, giving some spoilers out, because I know you may not want to do that tonight, but any big stories or any issues really that here in New Jersey, you know, and we talked about a few issues already tonight, whether it's the minimum wage, the debate about marijuana, the debate about taxes. Anything else on the horizon here in New Jersey that we should keep an eye out about that, you know, we should have in our radar, and anything, you know, you're going to be writing about coming up?
Well, I'm in Washington because I came down for the swearing in of the new Congress, and that's really related with, as everybody knows, there are, of the 12 Congress people from New Jersey, 11 of them were Democrats now. Democrats won in very Republican places, and I think for the Dems, Donald Trump is the gift that keeps on giving. So anyway, so I mean, that's something to watch. I mean, it's a national story, but it also involves like the local Democrats from New Jersey, just newly elected New Jersey Democrats, what are they going to do in Congress? I mean, are the Dems in Congress going to mess up, which politicians occasionally do? So that's a story to watch. And then back in New Jersey, I think the Republican Party is in trouble because Donald Trump is very unpopular, especially in New Jersey. And I think it's no accident where I live now. And you know, the Democrats won in Morris County, Sussex County, Warren County, places like that. And Republicans told me that they would go door to door. That's all, it's anecdotal information, but I think it's still relevant. Republicans say they would go door to door, and people would say, I normally vote Republican, but I'm not going to do it this time because of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is still going to be in the ballot this year and also next year. But I mean, the issue is how do Republicans cope with that? I mean, I think that's important because even if you're a bleeding heart liberal to the extreme, you got to realize that, you know, in a state like New Jersey, you need to have two political parties. I mean, one party rule is not good. You know, I think even if you're a liberal and you like the fact that Democrats are in control, you should realize that if one party controls all levels of government, and the Dems do that now in New Jersey, that could be problematic because you need like checks and balances. You need a good loyal opposition. And I don't know if we're going to, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if we're going to have one in New Jersey unless the Republicans find a way to revitalize themselves.
You know what, Fred? You're absolutely right, and you know, you just hit it out of the, you just hit it out of the ballpark right now with that observation. And you know, you're right about this being a very delicate time for, you know, for the NJGOP. And I think there's a microscope right now on Doug Steinhardt, you know, the state chair.
Absolutely.
You know, because let's be honest, and I say this all the time, and I know it, with some of my Republican friends it gets me in trouble, but you know, back in 2009. When Chris Christie defeated John Corzine in a really close election, it looked like, wow, this could be a different type of Republican in New Jersey. And as we all know, two terms later, you know, aside from the fact that, you know, the fact that, you know, listen, the fact that Chris Christie's a Cowboy fan, that's probably the only thing that I could maybe like him about him at this point, because,
you know,
after,
you know, I like that.
I remember it. I used to see his appearances on WFAN all the time. I look at the damage he did to the Republican brand in New Jersey, and I felt really bad for Kim Godano back in November of 2017 when she was running for governor, because I just said, you know what, it kind of reminded me of like Gerald Ford, you know, God rest his soul. It reminded me of Gerald Ford and like that sort of impossible battle he had to take on a really liberal guy like Jimmy Carter, where people just knew he had no chance to win. And I just think that was sort of the same premise I looked at when it comes to Kim Godano. I think that Governor Christie, you know, did a lot of a disservice to the Republican brand in New Jersey. I think that it hurt Republicans, not just along assembly seats, but also in the state Senate. I mean, Republicans didn't make any gains at all when he was governor. And I think now that, as you say, you know, New Jersey's under a one-party rule in the governor's office, both chambers of the legislature. But it just seems, though, Fred, that for me, and this is going back more than 20 years, where Democrats have controlled the legislature for almost a generation. And now it seems that, you know, Doug Steinhardt's job is very, very difficult, you know, and again, I don't know how he's even going to be able to make a dent in this sort of armor, because, again, this November, all 80 assembly seats are up for grabs. So if New Jerseyans are really upset about the direction fiscally that we're going in, well, this is a time when, you know what, people got to get up and say, you know what, I'm going to run for office. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get the petitions necessary and get signatures and get on a ballot. Otherwise, I think we're sort of just going down the same, you know, fiscal cliff. And it's not just about Democrats ruling the legislature. It's about, you know, if the Republican Party is serious in New Jersey, though, Fred, they got to get good candidates up there, not just typical party people that are just party loyalists. Like, if you're not getting good candidates out there, like, I think the Republican Party is going to die, not a slow death, but it could be like cardiac arrest in New Jersey.
Yeah,
like, am I wrong?
I mean, I think you're right. I think the immediate problem is it may not be getting good candidates to run against Dems. It may be just sort of defending the seats that they still have. Because like in Morris County in District 25, some people may know the names, Anthony Bucco is the state senator, and his son is one of the assembly people, Anthony Bucco Jr. And the Democrats came very close in that district in 2017, and they have some well-financed candidates already out there. I mean, I could see that if that's a district that the Democrats may win, especially after winning the congressional race in that county. So, I mean, the Republicans are still playing defense, and they've got to hold on to the seats that they have. And I think the difficulty is that it may help them, quote-unquote, help them if they try to distance themselves from Donald Trump. But then the risk is there's still the – I mean, I'm sure there's still the core Republican base which likes Donald Trump, so they don't want to lose those people. So, I mean, it's a very difficult balancing act.
Well, you know, I mean, today seeing, you know, the swearing in of the new Congress and seeing a very diverse class of new Democrats taking office in the House, certainly, you know, seeing Senator Menendez being sworn in again and obviously Republicans keeping the U.S. Senate, it just seems to me that today, and I saw some of the rhetoric, and I get it. Listen, here in New Jersey, the president is not popular. He's going to continue to remain unpopular in 2019, going into 2020. But on a national level, though, like I looked at today, and aside from my genuine dislike for Nancy Pelosi for a lot of reasons, which I could spend hours on, but the point is that it just seems that if the rhetoric on a national level, though, Fred, is, you know, some House Democrats, whether it's in New Jersey or nationwide, want to just start by saying, well, you know, we're going to start our first week in office by introducing articles of impeachment or subpoenas for this or subpoenas for that. Fred, I'm sorry, like, that's going to turn off a lot of middle-of-the-road kind of mainstream, not just New Jerseyans, but Americans.
No, I think that's the danger that, when I say the Democrats could screw up. I mean, they could overplay their hand and do things like that. Actually, Tom Malinowski from District 7 out in, like, Somerset, Hunterdon, Morris County, he said, I mean, I wrote about it a while back, but he said something interesting. He said that the Democrats have to be careful not to do things that are perceived to be extremely partisan. And he's right about that. I mean, and obviously what you said, I mean, there's two different things. I mean, in having investigations is one thing. Introducing articles of impeachment is something else. They're kind of separate things. So, I mean, you're right. I think the Dems have to be very careful in that regard. And, you know, they could certainly overplay their hand. I mean, after all, the presidential election is just 2020, and we know how that will be here before we know it. We know how fast time goes.
No, listen, absolutely. Before you know it, you know, the end of 2019 will be here. 2020 will be here. We'll start seeing the primaries where perhaps, you know, as many as 30 different Democrats will be running to challenge Donald Trump.
Well, maybe not that
next
many,
year. No, you're right, though. You're right. Fred, you know, folks, again, if you're just joining us here at 9:15 on the East Coast, it's great to have on here my fellow colleague at Insider NJ and journalist extraordinaire Fred Snowflake here tonight. Fred, before I let you go, first off, I want to thank you tonight for coming on. You've been a gentleman. I know it's been a long day for you.
It's been fun. Thank you.
No, I just want to thank you in advance. You've been great tonight. You know, it feels like I could talk to you for 3 hours and not get through everything on this show. But you've been great. And before I let you go, what I like to do with my guests is I like to give my guests the floor, because for the last hour, we've had a good conversation. I think we've had a good back and forth of ideas and discussion. But now it's your turn. Now I give my guests the floor and say, hey, you got a question for me, or you want something to air out with me? The floor is yours, Fred. Do you have anything for me tonight?
No, well, thank you very much, but actually I do not. I just enjoyed the conversation.
Well, listen, it's been a great conversation. Again, I'm, you know, as I said, I'm always someone that's very proud to be on the Insider NJ team. I'm proud to call
you
a teammate. And keep up the great work. You know, safe travels back from D.C. And we'll have you back on during the spring. You know, definitely catch up on more issues in New Jersey.
Then we can talk about baseball.
I think right around, I think the end of spring training, right around preseason baseball, I definitely want to have you back. We'll do maybe like a brief little preview of the 2019 season with the Yankees and Mets and see how, you know, how we fare.
That would be fun.
You know,
thank you.
Absolutely. Have a great night, Fred. Thanks for joining us tonight. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon here on Politically Direct.
Have
a good night.
Thanks. Bye. Okay. Bye.
All right. Take care. All right, folks. 9:20 here. Have a good night. 9:20 here on the East Coast. And, you know, great episode tonight, folks, with Fred Snowflake, the journalist extraordinaire there here on the Insider NJ team. Certainly, if you do not if you haven't checked out his articles, I don't know how you cannot, but great columns there. You can always check them out at insidernj.com. Always great, great articles. And certainly, you know, listen, he's bright, got a lot to say, and writes well. So certainly if you're looking for interesting, informative columns, hey, whether it's Fred Snowflack, Jay Lasseter, Max Pizarro, the editor-in-chief at Insider NJ, again, can't go wrong with the journalism that we offer online each and every day. Folks, again, if you're just joining us here, a great episode tonight. If you have any thoughts about tonight's episode, if you tuned in, do me a favor, call me in toll free, 818-572-8032. Once again, 818-572-8032. Phone lines are open. So if you want to call in and opine about tonight's episode with Fred Snowflake, my colleague at Insider NJ, or anything really about the New Jersey political climate or the national one, call me again, toll free, 818-572-8032. The toll-free number, again, brought to you by Insider Jay. And folks, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, you can always go to the top of the hour here to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. You can check out tonight's episode and all of my episodes from 2018. A lot of great traffic, a lot of great feedback and commentary about the shows. And certainly as we keep moving forward in 2019, certainly we appreciate your comments and really what you like about the show, what you don't like, you know, how we can make it better. Hey, we're here for you folks, my loyal listening audience. I listen to all you guys and gals out there. So if you are interested in offering some sort of feedback, I'd appreciate it. Again, you can always write to the show, by the way, which email politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. And certainly, as I said, I think you'll, you know, as I mentioned to you, I think you'll enjoy the, really, I think the feedback and sort of the content that we offer. So, you know, again, you know, 2018 was a great year for the podcast, and certainly it would not have happened without you, the loyal listening audience. So as I said before, do me a favor, write to the show. I'd love to hear from you. Again, I answer all my emails promptly, and I'm always, you know, not just sort of generalizing here. I do make it a point to write back and be very extensive and very detailed to you. So again, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, ladies and gentlemen, politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Certainly, check me out on Twitter @ProfessorFUribe. That's greatly appreciated also. And, of course, for all of you Facebook subscribers, do me a favor, check it out. Click the like button on the Facebook page for Politically Direct. And I appreciate you share it on your Facebook walls and to all your friends. Again, as I said, about the favorite podcast for so many here throughout the Golden State. Again, it's always Politically Direct via Insider NJ. Speaking of Insider NJ, folks, again, don't forget to check them out, www.insidernj.com, for the absolute best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey each and every morning. Do me a favor. Once you go on the website, click on the subscribe button, and you're automatically enrolled free of charge, and you'll receive the morning intelligence briefing right to your inbox, whether you check it on your smartphone, your Mac, your PC, tablet, whatever it is. You'll get the best journalism, the best columns, the best coverage of what's going on in New Jersey politically every single day. And, of course, it's courtesy of Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start your day with Insider NJ. All right, again, folks, as I said to you earlier, right at the start of the hour, if you missed any part of tonight's exclusive interview with journalist extraordinaire and fellow Insider NJ columnist Fred Snowflack, again, www.insidernj.com/podcast. You can check it out and share it. Let me know what you think again about the show. And certainly, let's have a great 2019, folks. And never forget that whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, maybe you're walking your dog, doing laundry for my students that are on semester break like myself, hey, tune in. Let me know. And if you did, what you like about the show, I always welcome feedback. Again, tune in and never forget, folks, that it's real, it's here, it is indeed politically direct. Good night, Trenton, New Jersey fans out there in Trenton, certainly that tune into the show, and certainly I hope that the legislature gets their act together in 2019. So good night, Trenton, to all the legislators out there. Please, folks, you know, do some justice by us here this year in 2019. And certainly to all my listeners, thanks for tuning in and being so loyal. So again, folks, please party responsibly this weekend. Again, for all of you, Happy New Year. And certainly for those of us that get to enjoy the NFL playoffs coming this Saturday, we begin with Wild Card Weekend. Hopefully my Cowboys begin their quest for Super Bowl number 6 as they host the Seahawks. Hopefully next Thursday, we'll have some good things to talk about. So, folks, again, please party responsibly. Enjoy yourselves. And I'll see you here next week on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.